Benvenuta. Well, that's my best Italian accent for you. And that's because today we head over to Italy to talk to one of our young, yes, Italian fellows, of course, Marta Vigano. Marta was part of our new media fellowship, where she's been investigating the impact of climate change on mental health and the role of the Catholic Church in shaping national climate narratives in her home country of Italy. She also recently published a collaborative story on Climate Tracker, focusing on the environmental impacts of the global coffee trade, tracing coffee beans from Guatemala. We recorded this in April this year, and it's full of COVID reflections, thoughts on the EU's future, and the role of journalism in shaping national narratives on climate. I hope you like it. It's a little bit dated, of course, but I think there's a lot of things to learn from this chat we had with Marta. And again, thanks for coming back to the show. Hi, Marta. How are you doing?
Hi. Hello. I'm very good. Thank you. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm in one of the few countries in the world where coronavirus isn't really an issue. How are things going in Italy?
I'm actually currently based in the UK because I'm finishing my master's here in journalism, media and globalization. But back home in Italy, the situation is quite bad, actually. Yesterday, they approved a decree which basically shut it down for the next month. Actually, we don't really have a date of, you know, things reopening.
So it's just like a broad shutdown for now, huh?
Yeah.
What a shame. Well, Marta, thank you so much for joining us regardless. I know, you know, I've been having phone calls most of the day. I know most people's minds are elsewhere right now and not thinking necessarily about climate change and climate journalism. But thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to chat with us.
Thank you. And I actually think that it's really important to talk about this because these two crises are actually very deeply intertwined. So it's always a pleasure to talk about climate and climate journalism in this case.
Well, I hope you'll have the chance to kind of explore that further. For now, though, I'd love to kind of understand who you are. And you know, I'd love to ask you, Marta, what is your story?
So I am a 25 years old Italian journalist, and I'm also currently a war reporting student based in the UK. In the past 3 years, I've been living and studying and working as well in four countries, among which Denmark, the UK, and Australia. And right now, I am a freelance journalist, along with my studies. So I'm about to complete my degree and hopefully start as a full-time journalist. And I usually cover migration, social issues, and the environment, and recently the climate and the climate crisis. And I really love discovering new things and just widening my perspective about the world in general. And I think that covering the climate is really helping me in that.
All right, so you've had quite a global experience already. You mentioned four different countries that you have done some studies or done some work in. Which one of those was your favorite? No pressure.
Well, I would say that I've always had a crush for Denmark, for Nordic countries in general. I really liked most of the values based on, you know, mutual respect and being part of a whole, which is which really resonates with me, with my set of values, and also with how I look at the climate crisis in general. Because, I would say that I really like covering this specific bit because it's somewhat a reminder of how human beings are part of a whole. So Denmark for these reasons, I would say, but also loved Australia.
It's all right. It's all right. You don't have to say that. Denmark's probably pretty good. and I'm guessing that that is probably one of the better places to try and get training, experience, and opportunities to write about climate change, because it is, or it seems to be, one of the media markets that's more receptive to climate stories than most others. Did you notice that when you were there?
Yes, I would say that it's true that it's seen as one of the forefront in sustainability and green economy. However, when I was there, I also started to notice that they really like to hang on this image of themselves. And so obviously they have some issues as well, among which the one that, you know, shook me most was that they're one of the biggest producers of municipal waste, like in Europe, and then they export it to, now I can't remember specifically which country, but yeah, they have a thing for dumping around the world. So that's that came a little bit of as a surprise, to be honest, but yeah, it put things in perspective. And I would also say that it was really interesting to see how on a daily basis, sustainability was really part of my everyday life. But at the same time, I didn't really have the chance to cover climate there, because everything is in Danish and I don't speak Danish. And yeah, the media landscape is pretty, it's pretty Danish based, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they might want to do that. But maybe let's jump over to Italy. Is that where you hope to kind of forge your early journalism career?
To be completely honest, I don't think so. I've been away for some years now, and I think I'd like to stay abroad for some more time. And actually during this very fellowship, I started freelancing a little bit with Italian outlets. So obviously at the very beginning of my journalistic career, I started volunteering for different outlets in Italy. And that's what I did for the past 2-3 years. But last summer and summer 2020, I started freelancing. And as I was abroad, I started, pitching stories to international outlets. And that was my goal. But recently during this fellowship, I started, looking back at Italian outlets, and I started pitching stories to them. And to be honest, it's a little bit hard. So I think I'd rather stay abroad for a little while more.
Oh, fair enough. I'd love to kind of dive into this experience that you're having, or as a kind of a newly, about to graduate, newly kind of jumping into the field of freelance writing. How does that feel for you right now?
It's at the same time really exciting and very scary. Exciting because it gives you the chance to work on what you really like without having the constraints of, having to cover that story or that because your editor says so. And it gives it, another thing that I really like is that it puts you in contact with so many people, editors, other journalists. And I don't know, that's really nice. I love meeting new people. And obviously that's a big part of that. And however, it's a little bit scary because as you're starting, you don't really have a network, you're building it. So it's a little bit more unstable, and you're feeling like you're shooting a little bit in the darkness from time to time. But I guess that's how it works.
Yeah, I guess so. Do you said that kind of engaging with international or pitching to international publications has been easier for you than Italian publications. Where are some of the places that you have been placed so far?
So far, I have written for, I don't have so much experience, but so far I've just been published on Vice and Local and, well, Climate Tracker as well. And now I have some more stories that will hopefully come out in the next weeks or, yeah, weeks, essentially.
Ah, that's awesome. I don't think that you should be embarrassed in any sense. That's already starting to be, you know, quite an accomplished list. And do you find that pitching climate stories has been kind of relatively easy, or do you think that pitching climate stories is maybe kind of comes with its own set of difficulties?
So I would say that climate stories are usually very well received. And so many editors get back to me and are like, that's actually a very nice story. And, you know, if you have more, just, you know, shoot them, because we're not covering climate change enough. So I think there's a lot of demand for these kind of stories. However, what surprised me a little bit is that usually I'm asked to find the conflict or the drama in these stories, which on the one hand I see, because that's one of the main news values, but I'm surprised at how, you know, solutions are not always very welcome because they are perceived as puff pieces, while recently I've been into this whole solution journalism thing. I'm writing my dissertation on that and how that is used in climate reporting in European outlets, both digital, native, and legacy media. And I think it's a very interesting way of reporting and giving a stage to solutions and what's working in society instead of, you know, focusing on what is not. Because I think, and at least in Italy, that's the case. So many people are getting, are getting detached from, you know, news because they perceive it's really depressing in a way. So, I was surprised to find this attachment to drama as regards to climate story as well.
Can you maybe explain that a little bit more, especially for people who aren't journalists themselves? What exactly are you finding yourself asked to do?
So for instance, something that I really like doing is finding someone, a reality, who is doing something good, you know, implementing programs that are having a positive impact in, you know, greenhouse gases, emissions reduction, for instance. And often I'm asked, okay, so what's not working about that program? Or who disagrees with that? And while on the one hand I see that, because obviously you want to approach what works critically, so yeah, I would say that usually there's a focus on what's dramatic and what is not really working.
And would you say that that's kind of a focus in terms of that's what they want to put on the headline? Or would you say that's a focus just kind of that's some of the feedback that you're receiving?
I think probably both, in the sense that I hope that it's just another layer of complexity that they want to add to stories. But at the same time, I also think that, you know, journalism has always focused on, you know, what's not working, for instance, to get to hold power and government accountable. So I think that's deeply rooted in certain types of journalism, this focus on problems in a way. But at the same time, I hope that it's just like, adding layers of complexity, I would say.
Well, I hope that's going to add kind of value to your story rather than see some of those stories rejected, because I think that kind of, you know, I'd really love to read those stories, and I really hope that that's still, are they still getting published?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, usually they are. It's just a little bit a change of an angle, but usually then they ended up accepting it.
Let's kind of dive in a little bit to, you know, I often ask people who are a little bit more experienced, what are some of the mistakes they made early on in their career? And if you've had like a 10, 15 year career, you might look back on those kind of a long time ago and think, wow, I'm so much different now. For you, obviously, you're kind of in the early stages of your career, and maybe kind of some of those things are closer to home, but have you noticed yourself changing some of the things that you were doing when you first started off, even over the last couple of months and years? Have you kind of looked back and seen yourself, seen some of your earlier articles and thought, oh my God, I can't believe I was doing that then, and now kind of you've changed what you're doing?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Although I am not a super experienced journalist, I definitely look back at my articles and be like, all right, well, that could have been better, but that's a good sign because I'm learning at least. So I would say that one thing that I have learned throughout time is that, you know, less is really more, in the sense that I come from a journalistic landscape, the Italian one, which is a little bit, how to put it, I would say that it's not the most inclusive type of journalism I have encountered, because I would say that, you know, when you read an Italian paper, especially when you're a little bit younger, you're a little bit lost. You're a little bit lost because there are so many metaphors and epithets that are just put there, and they require so much previous knowledge that you can't really understand them if you weren't already exposed or explained them. So, for instance, I remember growing up, there was this politician who was called the knight. And there were so many articles starting just without even mentioning his name and just going straight to the knight, who is the knight? I was wondering when I was like a teenager. And I would say that under this point of view, there's this research of language complexity and very concocted and poetic forms of narratives that obviously I tried to put in my early articles because, yeah, that's the journalism I was exposed to, and that's what I thought that would good journalism was. And then at some point I realized that I had friends who were reading my articles and they were like, I see the point, but at the same time, you know, it took me a while to understand what you were really saying. I had to reread the sentence and something clicked at that point. And I was like, I don't want people to read my articles and be like, that's a little bit pretentious, or I don't really understand what you mean and I need to go back to that. I think that's not very inclusive and it's not very accessible. So I would definitely say that now I try to be as simple as possible. And I think that's what I'm trying to implement right now and what I learned from my previous experience.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a great little reflection. I'd love to kind of now talk about the current state of what's going on in Italy, maybe what's going on in the EU, and when it comes to environmental kind of stories that you're diving into. What have you been writing about lately?
So lately I've been writing about deforestation and certain digital media and research engines are doing to tackle deforestation, and yet to understand whether that's been effective and to what extent that's really helping with the climate crisis. Then I'm currently writing two pieces about the role of Catholic Church in Italy, as you know, as regards the climate crisis, so how Catholicism and Catholic Church is shaping the climate narrative in Italy. And yeah, that's mainly what I've been working on.
And what do you find?
So for the first one, I found that obviously, I would say that for the first article, the main takeaway is that you need an harmonized effort by many different actors to tackle the climate crisis. And obviously digital technologies are becoming more and more present, and not even present in our daily life, they just constitute, I would say, the majority of our daily lives. So obviously they need to take a stand and do something for to tackle this crisis as well. And, but yeah, them alone wouldn't probably be the answer. And as for the Catholic, Catholic Church in climate crisis, I would say that there are so around the world, but especially in Italy, there are so many projects that are backed up by the church or by different churches under the Christian umbrella that are ultra local, but yeah, as every very local project is having very local impacts, and it's really touching on the community. So I'm finding that they're having an impact on a very local level, and yeah, that resonates with, you know, the action of the church in Italy and then obviously around the world as well. And I think I'm obviously not advocating for that, but I think, you know, the church and the churches are such relevant and important actors that it's impossible not to think about them as political. So I think it's good that they're taking action for this issue as well.
And what type of action are they taking? Do you see them taking real kind of systemic change type of action, or do you see it as kind of just symbolic stuff?
I would say, well, definitely both, but there are some really, I would say that plays on different levels. The local one, which is like maybe a small project which is impacting 10 to 20 people, which obviously doesn't really affect the entire economy or, you know, how the climate crisis is perceived at the very broad level. But those 10, 20 families are obviously impacted, and that, you know, has an impact on the people they have around. And so I would say that there's that level, but then something that I recently discovered is that there's a whole movement within the Catholic Church, which is phasing out the use of fossil fuel. And that's gaining momentum in so many areas of the world. And there's quite a big network of like around 700 realities in the Catholic Church, in the Catholic world. that are actually implementing this this program, and I think that makes a change.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, potentially religious faiths have the opportunity to kind of shape so many different people's perspectives. Do you think that this is a movement that will expand outside of Italy and across kind of the European Union, or maybe even outside of Europe?
I would say that it has already had, because many of these these local realities that that are facing out of fossil fuel are not only outside Italy, but also there are so many in South America and also Northern America and Southeast Asia a lot as well. So I would say so, and I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so as well. I think kind of for this year, it's going to be a critical year for Europe in kind of acting on their massive kind of Green New Deal, their kind of just transition process. What do you see as some of the potential hurdles or challenges for the European Union in taking that kind of incredibly large scale plan for effectively decarbonization forward? Do you see any kind of clear hurdles in the short or medium term?
I would say that probably nationalism is one of the biggest challenges in the EU, in general for the European project, but specifically for as concerns the climate crisis, because there are some countries in the EU that are still very dependent on fossil fuels for their economy, and obviously they're vetoing certain laws because that goes against their interest. So that is one type of challenge. And then I would say that once again, nationalism in another form, in the form of shaping domestic public opinion, plays a role as well, because oftentimes the EU is perceived as this very distant big power that just gets part of your taxes, and which is not very true, because obviously it does, but it also gives back so much in this sense of solidarity between the countries. But I think there's still a big part of the European population in different countries that is quite reluctant to accept what comes from Brussels. That's how it's usually portrayed, like something that is just imposed from the European capital, and or one of the European capitals actually, and so I would say that this is one of the challenge for sure. I hope it makes sense.
No, it does, definitely. And I think that rising nationalism has been an almost impossible hurdle for many countries to get over. Not necessarily get over in terms of having to overcome it, but certainly something they will have to deal with in trying to implement some sort of green transition, some sort of renewable energy transition for sure, because obviously a lot of nationalist forces are often funded by nationally owned utilities or kind of large utilities owned by very rich people who are often kind of supporting some of these nationalist forces in different countries. So I think you're definitely onto something there. I don't know how countries are going to overcome it. Do you feel like there is a role for journalism in trying to deal with this challenge?
I hope so. I would say that, you know, it might sound a little bit naive, but I do believe that words have an immense power, and especially in reshaping narratives, in creating meaning, and yeah, just, you know, acting as a filter between facts and then the population who is reading or like consuming news. And I, yeah, my hope is that, you know, journalism will be able to both keep these powers accountable, but also somewhat pass to the audience the urgency that that this green transition, the urgency of this green transition. And in other words, just keeping the, you know, pressuring governments and private actors to, you know, act on the climate crisis, but also convey how necessary it is to do so to the ordinary person who doesn't really have a systemic power, but obviously has an opinion, and with that opinion can shape, you know, can vote, can shape politics, and can shape dialogue. So I hope journalism in general has a role on that, has an impact on that. And especially as regards Italy, I would say that there's still a lot of work to be done in green journalism or environmental or climate journalism, because much of the Italian journalism on much of the climate stories in Italy are very much based on press releases that are very nicely crafted by private enterprises that are, you know, somewhat advertising what they're doing to, you know, to become more sustainable, which is great that they're doing. But my perception is that there's a lack of investigative climate journalism in Italy. Obviously, there are some really nice exceptions, but I would say that in major national outlets, the climate crisis is not treated with the urgency it needs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more strongly with you on that. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest challenges. We certainly have seen a significant drop off in climate reporting in the last year and a half, you know, due to COVID. It was, I was doing some kind of research on Google Trends the other day, and it was just kind of, it was dramatic how much it's fallen since even 2019. And I don't think many people felt that in 2019 we were getting the amount of climate reporting around the world that we should have. But it's just kind of dramatically dropped since then. Understandably, because the coronavirus has been all consuming, but obviously kind of disappointing for those people who still thought back in 2019 that we weren't getting enough, you know, really, really powerful reporting on climate change in the media regularly enough, and in the right types of publications as well. So Marta, I'm really happy that you are trying to step into that world, that you are trying to make a difference, and that you are trying to kind of learn how to use your craft to do that and to make that difference. So thank you so much for sitting down with us today, and it's been an absolute pleasure to get to know you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time and for this chat. It was really lovely.
Yeah. All right, so ciao, and have an awesome afternoon.
Lovely. To you too.
And that's it for the show this week. I'm Chris Wright, and this is Climate Tracker Weekly. For comments, suggestions, and feedback, you can email us at podcast@climatetracker.org. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, kindly leave us a comment. It helps new listeners to find us. And if you want to subscribe to our newsletter and visit our website, please do. Can't hurt, right? Join us again next time for another episode of Climate Tracker Weekly, and thanks for coming back. We're glad to have you.